Mary J. Schoen presiding. All of business before this court drawn near and you shall be heard. God bless the United States and this honorable court. Please be seated.
Good morning. I'm Judge Schoen. To my right is Judge Bartley. To my left is Judge Greenberg. We're here today to hear the case of Crystal D. Southall Norman v. Robert A. McDonald, Secretary of Veterans Affairs, docket number 15-1357. Would each counsel rise and please note your appearance for the record.
Good morning, Your Honor. Christian McTardigan for the appellant in the law firm Chisholm, Chisholm & Kilpatrick. And with me at counsel's table, Ms. Jenna Zellner, also of the firm.
Good morning, Your Honors. Omar Youssef for the Secretary. And with me at the table is Ken Walsh.
Thank you. Counsel for the appellant, do you wish to reserve time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. 10 minutes, please.
Thank you. We will set aside 10 minutes. You may begin when ready.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. The Board of Veterans Appeals erred when it failed to consider Section 4.59 in adjudicating the veteran's claim. The plain language dictates that it should apply to the fee. Section 4.59 states that it is the intention of the rating schedule to recognize actually painful joints as entitled to the minimum compensable rating for that joint. It is an indisputable medical fact that the foot is comprised of joints, and the Secretary does not contest that. In this case, the Board, in fact, made a favorable finding that the veteran had pain on use and pain on manipulation of her feet bilaterally. In Petiti, this court found that actually painful joints are synonymous with painful motion. It was inconceivable to this court that a joint that was actually painful would not be painful on motion. Your Honors, taking those two facts, the fact that Ms. Southall Norman had a painful foot disability, that the joints of her feet were painful on motion, when compared with the plain language of 4.59, dictates that the Board erred when it rated her at a non-compensable level for her bilateral foot disabilities between 2007 and 2014.
Well, what does the Secretary say, and what's your answer?
The Secretary's interpretation is that Section 4.59 only applies to diagnostic codes that are predicated on range of motion testing. Your Honor, that is inconsistent with the plain language of this regulation. Therefore, that interpretation should be afforded no deference.
Thank you.
Well, don't we have some case law that supports the Secretary to some degree in that we have DeLuca and kind of that line of cases that talked about the 4.40, 4.45, and sometimes 4.59 applying where the diagnostic code is based on range of motion deficits?
Well, Your Honor, those cases dealt specifically with functional loss. As the Secretary conceded in Mitchell, functional loss is separate and distinct from the concept of a minimum compensable rating. In fact, in that case, the Secretary stated that a 10% rating should be afforded when there's no actual limitation of motion.
What case are you referring to?
The Mitchell case, Your Honor.
Mitchell, okay.
Yes, Your Honor.
So in your brief, you discussed that her pallex valgus caused functional impairment due to pain while standing and walking, but you're not asserting that functional loss is a factor in determining whether 4.59 applies.
Exactly, Your Honor. So what we'd like to focus on is the fact that Ms. Southall Norman had an actually painful foot joint. Functional loss, in our argument, is irrelevant to whether or not Section 4.59 applies, because those are two separate and distinct legal concepts.
So following that, when the Board said that the rating adequately contemplated her functional loss occasioned by pain, you're saying that that is not implicitly considering 4.59?
I would say that it is not, Your Honor. I would agree that it does not consider 4.59, because functional loss is separate and apart from, you know, a 10% rating under 4.59. Getting back to Judge Greenberg's question very briefly, the Secretary's position in this case is not only inconsistent with the plain language, Your Honor, but it's also not his considered judgment. Judge Nolan, in this very courtroom, in Petiti, this question that brings us here today was asked. Does 4.59 apply to diagnostic codes that are not predicated in a range of motion? And in that case, at oral argument, the Secretary stated that it was not exclusive and that it applied to other potential cases where functional loss was not a part of the equation. And at that argument, that would be at minute 3139, and it was referred to in our 30B letter. Further, in our other 30B letter, we cited two cases where the Secretary, in fact, conceded that remand was necessary when there was a painful foot joint and the Board failed to consider Section 4.59. And if Your Honors have no further questions?
Well, I do. I was a little confused, actually, as to why we're arguing this, and maybe you didn't address what I thought was a simpler remand basis under 4.59, and that is that 4.59 has, I guess, one of its primary sentences says, it is the intention to recognize actually painful, comma, unstable, comma, or malaligned joints, comma, due to healed injury, comma, as entitled to at least the minimal compensable rating for the joint. And when I looked up Hallux Valgus, quite a few definitions, including Merck, I have them here, Merck, an NIH site, a Johns Hopkins medicine site, et cetera, talked about the malalignment of the metatophalangeal joint, MTP for short,
yes, Your Honor.
Which I will use from now on if I use it at all, because that's quite a mouthful. And I mean, did it occur to you to argue that the joint here is malaligned, or that there would be some argument that regardless of pain, any malalignment, and indeed there are several parts of the record that show that there is a malalignment of the MTP here, that regardless of pain, 4.59 should apply?
Well, I'd obviously have to concede that that was not briefed, Your Honor, but looking at the regulation, I would have to agree that malaligned joints also come within the construct of 4.59. I guess when we looked at the facts of this case, what was most prominent throughout the entire period on appeal was also the issue of pain. And, you know, when you look to 4.59, the plain language of that, of the regulation, also allows a 10% or a minimum compensable rating for pain. But I would agree with Your Honor that potentially malaligned joints would also be considered under 4.59.
And also, wouldn't the malalignment be another argument for showing that it doesn't have to be necessarily a limitation of motion diagnostic code, because malalignment doesn't per se result in limitation of motion, but it's specifically contemplated by 4.59?
Yes, Your Honor, I would agree with that. And if Your Honors have no further questions, I would just ask that this court please hold that Section 4.59, in fact, applies to the feet, and to vacate and remand the board's decision for it to consider 4.59. And I would also like to ask this court to please remand Ms. Southall Norman's second claim that was brought in the brief, an increased rating for impairment of sphincter control, for the issues that were briefed. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning. May it please the court. The secretary respectfully asks the court to affirm the board's determination that the appellant is not entitled to a compensable rating for her bilateral foot disability prior to June 2, 2014, nor to a separate compensable rating for her impairment of sphincter control. With respect to her bilateral foot disability, the secretary maintains that the board committed no error for three reasons when it did not consider Section 4.59. First, the secretary maintains that his position is rooted in his noted interpretation of Section 4.59, that it applies only to diagnostic codes that consider range of motion. Second, the applicable...
So that's his position, but where do you find that in the regulation or support for that?
Your Honor, it's not explicitly clear in 4.59, but it is evinced in the M21, which is used as a guiding principle for the raters. Additionally...
Did the M21-1 rely on anything, or is this just...
Your Honor, the Secretary's interpretation of the regulation is premised on the type of disability, the structural disability versus a mechanical disability. The Secretary views the flat feet or the pes planus to be a structural disability that does not warrant a range of motion consideration as being relevant to a determination of the extent to which she is functionally impaired or the extent to which her earning capacity is reduced. So to that extent, the M21 reflects the Secretary's interpretation that range of motion is irrelevant to that determination.
You jump right to interpreting the regulation and arguing that the regulation is ambiguous. What can you walk me through why the regulation is ambiguous when it doesn't reference an exclusion for or to only cases that have limitation of motion?
Yes, Your Honor. The regulation, for a few reasons, the language of the regulation itself is unclear with respect to its applicability. My appellant's counsel discussed functional loss. It's unclear from the regulation whether functional loss is relevant to a determination of whether 4.59 applies or not. The language of the regulation also suggests that the intention is to recognize painful motion, yet the very next sentence says that the intention is also to recognize actually painful joints, which the court interpreted in Petiti as being synonymous. Additionally, this court found in Correa that the last sentence of Section 4.59 is ambiguous when read within the context of the whole. It's unclear with respect to the plain language of 4.59 what the scope of its applicability is to be. There are multiple possible interpretations with respect to whether it is to apply only to painful joints or to painful motion. When there are multiple interpretations, the Secretary submits that his interpretation is entitled to deference, as the court found in Reisenstein, the Federal Circuit found in Reisenstein. If the court were to apply 4.59 to 5276, it would essentially moot out the minimum compensable rating, the non-compensable rating that was awarded to the appellant and that is recognized in the diagnostic code, and essentially create a de facto 10% rating, even though the specific intent of the diagnostic code found that her specific condition was relieved, her symptoms were relieved by the orthotics that she wore, and her symptomatology was akin to a 0% rating.
Well, but isn't the sort of your argument about a de facto 10% rating, wouldn't that be applicable to any application of 4.59, that it's overcoming the will of the diagnostic code in the particular case that this person didn't get a rating, otherwise they wouldn't be trying to get it under 4.59?
No, Your Honor. Respectfully, the Secretary submits that 4.59 is to apply when pain is not already considered by the diagnostic code. Hence, he submits that it applies in range of motion, within a range of motion context, because range of motion diagnostic codes do not consider pain.
Wait, I'm sorry, can you say that again?
Sure. So range of motion diagnostic codes do not.
No. That 4.59 only applies in context of diagnostic codes that don't that consider pains?
That do consider range of motion because range of motion diagnostic codes do not inherently consider pain. The diagnostic codes in this case considered pain, specifically 5276. Appellant's counsel referenced the pain on manipulation, but that is specifically contemplated in the diagnostic code. So to that extent, 4.59 does not apply to that diagnostic code. The Secretary's interpretation...
Isn't that somewhat circular logic? That because the diagnostic code... Okay, I think appellant's argument was the diagnostic code, the PES Planus 1, talks about pain on use and manipulation. Use, obviously, is when you're moving it. Right. I'm assuming you can't use your foot without moving it, so it would be a kind of a range of motion assessment. And you're saying that because that's in the DC, which you actually require some kind of range of motion to be mentioned or alluded to in the DC, that 4.59 wouldn't apply because it's already considered in the DC? This seems like there's something circular there.
No, Your Honor. We're saying that the diagnostic code does not measure range of motion. It does not consider range of motion to be relevant. But
his argument was that the words manipulation and particularly use do contemplate some assessment of motion, perhaps not directly range of motion. But, you know, you have general counsel opinions where the general counsel has actually said that the DC doesn't necessarily need to be a range of motion DC. It can, I think they've talked about other foot injuries, that DC could contemplate range of motion. Anyway, my point was that you're saying that it was actually, you know, he's arguing that use and manipulation are in the DC, and you're admitting they are, and his argument is, well, that the use of those terms means that range of motion, or at least limitation of motion, is being assessed in the DC, and therefore 4.59, this is a limitation of motion DC, and therefore 4.59 would apply. And then you said, well, because it's in the DC already covers it, and so 4.59 wouldn't apply, and that doesn't seem to be correct logic to me.
Your Honor, what I'm saying is that the diagnostic code considered the pain on manipulation, but that is not equivalent to the range of motion as contemplated.
Well, what about pain on use?
Secretary would submit that that's separate from the range of motion diagnostic codes that consider the limitation according to different planes and measuring the degrees of impairment, which is not contemplated in 5276. 5276, the pain on manipulation essentially consists of taking the foot and moving it like this, but it's not necessarily considering the extent to which her joint may be impaired with her planes of movement, which is what...
Well, isn't that what use would cover to some degree?
Not for the purposes of this condition, Your Honor. The Secretary does not consider, I guess, the impairment, the range of motion impairment, to be relevant to the underlying condition.
Okay. Well, just to move on then, you're asking for our deference, but the appellant's counsel did submit some evidence that the Secretary's position hasn't been consistent, in that there are, I think, two joint motions for remand that the Secretary has agreed to, obviously being a joint motion. And so the court ordered those cases to go back even where the DC, to go back for consideration of 4.59, even where the diagnostic code did not, I think, oh, actually, it was under one of the, it was either the pest plan, I think it was the pest planus, actually. They have, you, the Secretary has actually conceded in the past that 4.59 could apply to this DC.
Yes, Your Honor, the Appellant's Counsel identified two cases where the Secretary conceded a remand, but both of those cases were not conceding that 4.59 applied. There were concessions for a determination of whether it may apply.
Yeah, but that's, I mean, but that's what he's arguing here. What you both seem to agree that the Secretary, even though, I'm sorry, that the Board, even though it used this, these phrases, functional loss and pain and this and that, didn't consider 4.59. So the notion is, well, it should go back to consider 4.59.
Yes, unfortunately, Your Honor, the Secretary would note that those decisions were probably contradictory to the Secretary's official interpretation, which has been evinced in the M21 for at least the last 8 years. And that is a representation of the official policy. Unfortunately, the Secretary cannot appeal Board decisions that are made, favorable Board decisions. Congress did not intend the Secretary to appeal those decisions. But I would surmise that the cases that Appellant's Counsel identified did not represent the official position of the Secretary. The M21 explains that the functional loss that's discussed in the regulatory sections 4.40, 4.45, and 4.59 are not used to evaluate musculoskeletal conditions that do not involve range of motion findings.
Well, then why did the Board here mention pain and functional loss? And they actually seem to be considering whether the veteran should get a compensable eval under 4.40 and 4.45 because they used the phraseology that's used in those regs.
Yes, Your Honor, we would contend that that is a part of the diagnostic code itself, such as the pain on manipulation, pain on use. The wording.
The Board actually said, though, that contemplates any functional loss occasioned by pain. The regulation doesn't, the diagnostic code doesn't mention functional loss. It seems to be like magic words that are associated with 4.40 and 4.45.
And it cited DeLuca, which is like a dead giveaway, seemingly.
Yes, Your Honor, but the court, as Judge Bartley was alluding to earlier, has also found that sections 4.40 and 4.59, this was in the case Johnson, that they do not apply to diagnostic codes that do not consider range of motion, and that was within the context of DC 5257, which is not a range of motion diagnostic code. Excuse me, 4.45. The M21 also groups these three regulatory sections together as guiding principles for the raters. And the court actually supported that notion in Correa when it found that these sections were guiding principles. And the first two, 4.40 and 4.45, reflect the functional loss that is to be addressed and identified what the examiners are to look for, whereas 4.59 explains how to get to that and how to measure that functional loss.
So your argument is opposite of opposing counsel, that 4.59 does involve a consideration of functional loss?
Your Honor, our argument is that it's unclear whether it does involve functional loss or not. And because it is unclear, the Secretary's interpretation would be entitled to deference. The regulation does not unambiguously answer the question of the scope of its applicability, as the Federal Circuit found in Reisenstein. And because it does not unambiguously answer that question, the Secretary's interpretation would be entitled to deference.
Well, I'd like to talk a little bit more about some of the language in 4.59 that I discussed with your opposing counsel about unstable or malaligned joints. How does that imply or clarify or create any ambiguity that it's limited to range of motion, limitation of motion?
Your Honor, the discussion of malaligned or actually painful joints would seem to conflict.
Or unstable.
Would seem to conflict with the latter language in the diagnostic code, which the court found does require range of motion testing when 4.59 is applicable. The last two sentences of 4.59 explain that flexion elicits some of these manifestations, and that painful motion should be tested for by active and passive motion, as well as on weight-bearing and non-weight-bearing contexts. Additionally, this court has found that the section headings are not dispositive, but they are helpful. And the section heading for painful motion also indicates that it applies within a motion context, yet that seems to conflict with the language in the reg that also identifies actually painful joints, and it is unclear within which context it is to apply.
Well, it could be synthesized in that, to me, it seems to indicate that a malaligned joint or an unstable joint could be considered the equivalent. There's some equivalency, equivalent to an actually painful joint. I mean, that kind of reads that way. So even though that you're right, the reg is titled painful motion and deals a lot with painful motion and how to assess a painful joint, it seems to be possibly setting up some equivalency and saying, oh, and by the way, malaligned and unstable joints are kind of the equivalent of painful for our purposes.
Your Honor, respectfully, that may be true, but it is unclear whether the reference to the actual painful joints is synonymous or whether that it would be an exception to a situation where the rating schedule does not already consider pain, or whether it is not synonymous with painful motion. The language of the regulation is unclear. The Secretary admits that it could have been more clearly drafted and put together, but it is unclear whether the regulatory section contemplates or applies beyond that context. The symptoms that the appellant experiences in this case consist primarily of pain upon standing or walking, in addition to the pain on manipulation that she experienced in the clinical settings. The M21, however, also indicates that it does not consider pain on weight bearing to be painful motion for purposes of 4.59.
Then why does VA require testing to be done in weight bearing and non-weight bearing if pain on weight bearing is irrelevant?
Your Honor, the testing that is to be done is just to assess the underlying disability. The examiner may test for more than what is relevant to the applicable diagnostic code. It also
this testing, though, pertains to applicability of 4.59, not how they're going to rate under the diagnostic code that's applicable.
Correct, Your Honor, but it also reflects the ambiguity of the underlying regulatory provision as well, because it is unclear why the testing would be required when it would not be relevant.
I have a question, counsel. What do you mean by the official position of the secretary? Where do we find that?
Your Honor, the M21 evinces the secretary's, excuse me, I have a moment.
Certainly.
Your Honor, the interpretation was proffered in the Secretary's brief before the court. The M21 just evinces that policy that has been in effect consistently. This was not a post hoc rationalization. This has been in effect for at least the previous 8 years, despite the mistakes that may have been committed with respect to conceding whether 4.59 may apply or not. In this case, the board properly explained that her symptoms were alleviated by the shoe orthotics that she wore, so that her symptomatology was more akin to a 0% rating. And as referenced earlier, applying 4.59 here would essentially eviscerate that determination and supersede the specific intent of the diagnostic code. With respect to the appellant's second claim, with respect to the impairment of signature control, the secretary would submit that the court should affirm that decision as well. The appellant's argument is premised primarily upon the changed circumstances that may have occurred since the 2007 VA examination, but in doing so, she overlooks the inconsistent statements that the board relied on. The statements the board found that were made for medical treatment purposes were entitled to more probative weight, and the board was authorized to make this determination as part of its duty to weigh the evidence and assign probative value. The secretary submits now that there's no clear error because the evidence shows that there is inconsistency between her statements. In her July 2007 VA examination, she reported a leakage of stool that occurred less than one-third of the day in slight amounts without need of a pad. And later that year, in a December 2007 private treatment record, she also reported hemorrhoid pain for more than 6 months, as well as a small amount of pus and blood with wiping only, while denying pain, bloody stool, and constipation. And critically, in August 2011, the VA examiner found that the appellant had internal hemorrhoids but did not find any impairment of sphincter control, nor any moderate or extensive leakage. Although this is not what appellant reported herself, this is significant because it supports the board's finding of inconsistency. In contrast to the statements that she made to the medical examiners, she also reported in August 2008 that she had external hemorrhoids and she alleged constant bleeding and leaking. Her November 2008 statement referenced a painful hemorrhoid, pain when using the bathroom, constant or small traces of blood in the stool, and that her external hemorrhoid stained her undergarments and she had and was constantly oozing pus or bleeding. This contravenes her earlier statements with respect to the frequency of such symptoms. Excuse me. She also testified in October 2013 that she wore an absorbent material every day for the past 5 or 6 years, whereas in 2007 she alleged that she did not require a pad.
What's the
inconsistency? I just don't understand what's inconsistent about the hemorrhoid condition progressing, I mean, over a 5 or 6 year period, so that in 2007 you're not using pads and there's no fecal staining, and then in 2013 you are using pads and there is. I mean, isn't that just her? I don't see the inconsistency there.
The secretary is certainly cognizant that her symptoms may have worsened. But the plausibility, the board's finding was plausible in this instance given the internal inconsistencies of her statements. The board is focused on the statements that she made for treatment purposes versus the statements that she made to VA for her appeal for compensation purposes. The secretary certainly understands that the court may disagree with that determination, but the secretary does not view it as being a remandable error that he would concede at this point. There is, as I indicated, additional evidence against her point, as the August 2011 examiner found that she did not have an impairment of sphincter control, and he also noted that she did not have any leakage at that point, despite her claims. Additionally, there is evidence that the leakage was actually external and not reflective of an impaired sphincter control. The board identified or noted that she did not distinguish between the types of leakage that she experienced. And
we get it.
Well, I was going to say it's not the greatest topic, but I mean, isn't that admission that she wasn't, the evidence isn't clear as to what kind of leakage? When she just generally mentions leakage, that
yes, Your Honor,
it requires some kind of factual development, possibly.
Your Honor, if the court finds that that was a clear error, but in this case, the secretary would surmise that the board was indicating that she did not distinguish whether it was blood or whether it was stool or what the leakage was, and that would support the board's finding because there was no indication to support her statements. If there are no further questions, the Secretary respectfully asks the Court to affirm the Board's decision.
Thank you. Just a moment, we're having a clock issue.
Of course.
Okay, you have 10 minutes for rebuttal. You may begin, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. The plain language of Section 4.59 is not ambiguous, Your Honors. The plain language, and therefore the appropriate meaning of that regulation, is that it should apply to all painful joints. Actually painful joints are painful on motion. The last sentence does not change the plain meaning. The last sentence of that regulation merely informs the board and the adjudicator how to rate and how to look at painful motion. That does not mean that 4.59 only applies to diagnostic codes that are predicated on range of motion. The Secretary's attempt to use deference to support his argument should simply not be accepted. If you look at the M21M provision, that provision that the Secretary states embodies his long-standing interpretation of Section 4.59 applies to only functional loss. As Mitchell stated, functional loss is separate from a minimum compensable rating. Functional loss is what a veteran must display in order to get a higher rating under the diagnostic code, not merely the minimum compensable rating. Moreover, this M21 provision was adopted in 2007. That was prior to both this court's holding in Mitchell in 2011 and this court's holding in Petiti that was made only last year. It is contrary to the holdings in both of those cases. Further, M21 Section G that the Secretary cites in the 30B letter also is contrary to this court's case law. It completely is contrary to Petiti. Pain on motion or an actually painful joint in Petiti, this court held, doesn't need medical evidence. It doesn't need objective evidence. In fact, in that case, this court used the daughter's, Mr. Petiti's daughter's statements that her father had difficulty walking and standing as evidence of painful motion. And finally, to briefly address the impairment of sphincter control argument, our argument in the brief here was simply that the board provided an improper negative credibility determination. As Judge Bartley mentioned, not mentioning an increase in symptoms in a 2007 VA examination before they even happened simply doesn't make any sense. And if there are no further questions, Your Honor, I would again ask this court to please hold that 4.59 applies to foot disabilities and to please vacate and remand the board's decision for it to consider 4.59 and also remand the increased rating for sphincter control issue for the board to provide an adequate statement of reasons and bases for its credibility finding, Your Honors.
Thank you very much. The case is submitted for the record. I'd like to note that this was both of our counsel's first arguments. I think they availed themselves equally well. And the court will now greet counsel.
All right.
Thank you very much.